Chapter 2. Seabridge Castle, England. Spring, 1493. It had been over 7 years since that fateful Christmas Eve. Morgan, now a young woman of 20, stood taking a deep breath for courage. "You can do this," Morgan whispered, her words disappearing into the darkness of the secret passageway. "You must do this, my child." Her mother's voice came back, echoing softly on the draughty air. In spite of the damp and chill lingering in the midnight air, Morgan found herself wiping away a bead of sweat inching its way down her temple. Escape was her focus, and having planned this moment of escape for years, she knew with utter certainty it was now or never. She wasn't about to let a little thing like fear keep her from obtaining the one thing she hadn't had in 7 years. Freedom. She could smell freedom. She tasted it on the stale, salty air as it bubbled up from the depths of the castle. Her uncle had indeed returned her to Seabridge after the death of her family. However, he had seen that she remained locked away here, neglected and abused. His subjects were too afraid of him to help her. Morgan was held captive in the castle, simply too isolated for anyone to even realize she was a prisoner in her own home, beaten, starved, and alone in her torment. "You can do this, heart of my heart." The soft encouragement of her mother's ghost answered her trepidation. She closed her eyes against the blackness that would lead her to the damp bowels of the castle. Plunging through the secret door of the tower room, Morgan quickly felt for the lever. By fortune, she had found the doorway 5 years earlier. Morgan remembered the day clearly. Desperate for warmth, Morgan pulled the tapestry off the wall and wrapped it around herself. Huddled and shivering against the opposite wall, she stared, transfixed, for days on end. Then, as if by magic, one moment she was looking at bare stone, and the next she saw it. Gaps in the mortar that were too regular to be caused by age alone. She sprang to her feet, flinging the moldy tapestry behind her. Hope spurred her to push and prod and smooth her hand against the rough-hewn surface, searching for the key to open this hidden door. The heady promise of freedom sharpened her focus, and it wasn't long before she found a loose chunk of mortar that, when lifted, let the door swing inward. That black moor had terrified her, and she quickly closed the door again, hanging the tapestry back in its place lest someone else discover the secret. She had never taken it down, no matter how cold she had felt. In the years following that grand discovery, Morgan's sheer willpower and determination fueled her exploration of the narrow passageway that some long-ago ancestor had been insightful enough to build. Had she been a man, she would have had to turn sideways to traverse the path. Over time, her courage grew as the cobwebs cleared and remains of long-dead rodents were crushed beneath her feet. Finding other entrances, she began raiding other rooms for items she thought would help when she finally made her bid to escape. She kept them hidden in a stolen sack just inside the passageway of her cell. Picking up the sack of items she had managed to collect on her nightly excursions, she dug through them to find trousers, a shirt, and a knife, which she placed soundlessly on the floor of the passage. Slipping off the ragged dress, Morgan quickly used the scraps as undergarments to bind her breasts. Then she pulled on one of the two sets of stolen clothing. With no one to care or help to tend her needs, there had been no opportunity for a haircut. In 7 years, her hair had grown past her waist. She knew it had to go. It was crucial to her disguise as a stable boy. She awkwardly sawed across the long braid where it was gathered at the base of her neck, until the last of the strands broke free. The weight of it transferring from her head to her hand felt like a different kind of freedom. Placing the severed tresses into a second sack once used for seed, she prayed the confinement would keep any of the long dark strands from inadvertently making their way under the opening and giving away the existence of the door. If she had to abort this escape attempt, she needed to ensure her secret was safe. Not that she would have a reasonable explanation for how she cut her hair without a proper tool, should she have to return unsuccessfully in this attempt. Tying a knot in the top of the sack, she placed it to the side, leaving it behind along with any remaining self-doubt. From this point to the next, Morgan would be in complete darkness, knowing that each of the chambers had slits in the walls for secret viewing. She couldn't risk someone seeing a light source shining through the walls, alerting someone to her presence. "It's neither here nor there," she thought. She didn't need the light, knowing every passageway as intimately as she did. When she began to venture out over 5 years ago, there had been several narrow escapes. Almost immediately, tales began to circulate of certain parts of the castle being haunted with the spirit of her long-dead mother. A few servants came forward, claiming to have seen the ghost of the 6th Duchess wandering the castle at night, searching for her dead children. Some had gone as far as to say the Duchess had spoken to them through the walls. Her uncle had dismissed all this as the ranting of the ignorant. Morgan had taken full advantage. Knowing none of the superstitious folk would venture to the places they thought to be haunted, bought her time to roam the castle more freely. Morgan smiled, the thought giving her courage. The only thing wandering the corridors of Seabridge was her, and she had no intentions of dying any time soon. She moved slowly, feeling her way along the passage, careful not to give her presence away to the occupants in the chambers just inches away. Step by agonizing step, Morgan kept her breathing even and silent, just as she had practiced. Inching her way closer to her first destination, Morgan felt for the latch located at the top of the door. This passage exited into the solar, opening less than 2 feet from the desk that had once belonged to her father. Stopping at the panel, which, to the unknowing eye, looked like the third in a trio of bookcases lining the wall behind the desk, she placed her ear to the cool surface to listen for evidence of anyone in the chamber. With her uncle still in London for the Easter celebration, she doubted there was any activity in this part of the castle, especially at this hour. Yet caution was still the rule. She hadn't survived this long by being reckless. Silently, the latch released, and holding the panel from springing open, she cracked it ever so slightly. Peering through the crack in the panel, Morgan could see that there was no one in the solar. Breathing a sigh of relief, she slipped through the opening. Crouching down behind the desk, she silently closed the bookcase behind her, gently placing pressure until hearing the soft click of the latch. In the silence of the night, it sounded very loud, yet no one came to investigate. She had cleared another hurdle. The second escape hatch was a scuttle hole low on the wall in the opposite corner, which opened out to a landing for a set of very narrow stairs leading down into the maze of tunnels beneath the castle. Feeling along the wall for the edge she knew was there, Morgan pressed another stone designed to move with ease. Again, an engineering wonder that a massive stone could be moved by a slip of a woman. She looked around the darkened room for what she hoped was the last and final time. This was the same room she had once played chess in with her father. That wonderful time seemed ages ago, before the fire consumed her family at her uncle's estate, leaving her sole heir to the family fortune, the dukedom called Seabridge. She had become the 7th Duchess that fateful night, which claimed the lives of her father, mother, twin sister, and brothers. In a flash, she had become the ward of her father's stepbrother, her only known living relation. The man was evil, and over the 7 years that she had been under his care, he had placed his share of emotional and physical scars upon her. With good reason, she had grown to suspect he had killed her family for his own personal gain. If she stayed, Morgan knew he would eventually kill her too. "No more. It ends tonight," she vowed as she stared into the void left by the stone. Morgan inhaled the stale, cold air bubbling up from the frigid depths of the castle. She knew it was the smell of liberty. Morgan stared into the darkness. Only 300 yards of underground tunnel separated her from the edge of the paddocks and her means of escape. She had spent years exploring the miles of tunnels, hoping she would find the one tunnel that opened past the castle walls. After years of searching, she had been victorious, not only in finding the bolt hole, but also in finding the contract between her father and the king. "And none too soon," Morgan thought. She was aware King Henry had refused Leicester's petition to marry her the previous summer. Leicester unsuccessfully argued that there was no blood relation between them. Her grandfather's second wife was Leicester's mother, and he was 10 years old when they married. It had not mattered to the king. Henry really didn't care if her father and Leicester had shared neither the same father nor mother. Leicester wasn't of noble blood. His mother only married into it. Morgan, by contrast, was a not-so-distant relative to the king and royal family. The king had given her uncle a royal nay and sent him packing. She overheard some of the house servants laughing at his ousting by the king, feeling it was less than he actually deserved. Morgan agreed. At the time, her triumph had been very short-lived. Leicester must have vowed that if he couldn't marry her to secure the dukedom and titles for himself, he would marry her to someone he could control. Consequently, he had paraded her in front of a score of potential husbands, as if she were a piece of property to go to the highest bidder. She remembered hearing about spinster relatives, who were considered eccentric and had lived respectable lives courtesy of their wealth and intelligence. Morgan knew she had no use for marriage. She was almost past a respectable marriageable age, and she was more than capable of making her own decisions about her life. She had had nothing but time to plan her future. If she could only survive another couple of weeks until her 21st birthday, she would then be truly free. She would never have to answer to any man except for the king himself. After years of searching through the cracks and crevices of the castle, she had finally found the contract her father had drawn up between King Henry and himself when she was a child. Her mother had shown it to her only days before the fire, reading it to her and explaining paragraph by paragraph how the agreement worked. She remembered the day clearly.
"Morgan, your father and I love you, and as our firstborn, we have discussed your future at great length. He and I are in agreement that your happiness is the most important thing for us. It is important for all our children."
"I am happy." Morgan remembered feeling content at that moment, sitting by the large window in her father's solar, with her sister sitting next to her reading one of the valuable books her father had in his prized collection. Her beautiful mother was sitting only a few feet from them, with the folds of her skirt spread out around her, as she sat in the cushioned chair next to the fireplace. Lady Pembridge patted the seat next to her.
"Come here, my sweet girls."
She had waited for Morgan and Rhiannon to join her. Morgan sat at her mother's right, and Rhiannon situated herself on a cushion on the floor by her feet.
"Morgan, you are our eldest child, and should the unthinkable happen, your father and I wanted to be sure that all of you were taken care of properly. Not that I'm saying anything will happen. It is wise to have a plan in place."
"What plan, Mama?" Rhiannon asked. She was so quiet, and she rarely spoke. As a twin, Rhiannon and Morgan could communicate without words, and often did. Her vocalizing the question confirmed to Morgan that Rhiannon was engaged in the conversation and not lost in her own magical world of make-believe. It was rare that anything would pull her out of her daydreams. The older they became, the more Rhiannon withdrew.
"Well, girls, not every man is as good and decent as your father," Lady Pembridge stated. "Life for a woman can be hard. This is especially true if the circumstances are not, shall I dare say, ideal. Because of that, your father and I want you to have some leverage. We want you to have the ability of input into your circumstances. I want to read you something, and it is very important that you understand what this document represents."
Morgan sat beside her mother and peered at the parchment that contained several wax seals. One belonged to the king.
"Now, girls, This document is an agreement between your father and the king. The decree states clearly that should either of you find yourself in the hands of a guardian and not find a husband of your own choosing, and that is the key to this whole thing, a husband of your own choice, then on your 21st birthday, your inheritance is yours to manage as you see fit, without any outside interference. Morgan, Seabridge is yours, as you are our firstborn. I don't care that the archaic practice is only boys being in line to inherit. It's simply offensive to me, and your father agrees.
Will the boys live here, Mama? Morgan asked.
If they are not old enough to be fostered, then yes. Nevertheless, the boys have been given property of their own to manage upon your father's death. Rhiannon, you will have Harthill Manor, under the same stipulations that Morgan has with Seabridge.
I love Harthill Manor, Mama, Rhiannon said, looking shyly down at her lap. I shall be happy there.
I know, my love. Lady Pembridge smiled at her daughter, who was only minutes younger than Morgan. Morgan had recalled that her mother worried more about Rhiannon than the boys, and at one point her mother had asked her to always keep watch over her sister. Rhiannon had a tender heart, and she was fragile in body and spirit. Morgan, this paragraph states that you will oversee Rhiannon's marriage contract, giving her the same freedom as we have given to you to refuse a suitor. Rhiannon, Morgan will have the final say. I want you to have a good marriage, my love, not one that will harm you. Sometimes love is blind, leaving us vulnerable to those who would prey on us as women. This contract ensures that you will not be forced into a marriage that you do not want. It does not give you the freedom to marry who you want, unless it is an acceptable match. Do you understand the difference?
Yes, ma'am, Rhiannon acknowledged. I am content to let Morgan choose, she said, as her gaze drifted back out the window.
Good. Morgan, if you are old enough to marry and James and John are still babies, then they will be under the care of your husband until they are ready to be fostered. So choose well.
I shall choose a man just like Da, Morgan said, with a confident lift of her chin.
I could wish that for both of you, my loves. But men like your father who respect their wives and let them have a voice are rare. Not that they aren't out there. They are just hard to find.
And if I do not marry? Morgan asked, feeling that it was preferable never to marry than to marry and have a man she called husband not live up to the standard she had in her mind. James Morgan Pembridge was a shining example of a husband and father. She would settle for nothing less than a man who was his equal. Her Da was not perfect, but he was a God-fearing man, and he loved his family.
I hope that you do find that man, Morgan. The love that I have found with your father, and the joy my children give me, is very fulfilling. But should you make the choice to remain unwed, then choose your steward wisely. Do not follow any man's counsel blindly, but take the counsel of several. Above all, Morgan, think for yourself,
Lady Pembridge said, with a great deal of conviction. I don't know why we are even discussing this subject. Morgan remembered the feeling of dread that shot through her, and she rose to her feet. You and Da will be here to help me make a good match with a loving man who will adore me like Da adores you, and I shall give you a dozen grandchildren, Morgan said, feeling the blush rise in her cheeks.
You are probably right. But I want you to understand that life is not always fair, love, and fate can be cruel at times. Just remember that this contract exists.
Morgan acknowledged the terms of the agreement struck were not totally unprecedented. It is just not something done if other means were possible for management of an estate, and that usually entailed a marriage. At 20, she understood the finer points of how society functioned. She understood what it was, and was not a cultural norm. This was not the norm. Furthermore, her father knew that it was unorthodox when he drafted the document at the insistence of her mother. Her father gave her mother everything her heart desired, so her mother hadn't needed to push very hard to get him to negotiate this agreement. Henry signed the agreement in September 1485, the first year of his rule and ascension to the throne. Morgan was certain her uncle couldn't possibly know of the agreement's existence. Otherwise, the man would have had no qualms of forcing her into marriage years ago with a lackey of his own choosing before the king could object. It was certainly not to her uncle's advantage for her to reach her birthday unmarried. However, in the meantime, Leicester's greedy nature was playing into her plans. Knowing Leicester was in no hurry to see her placed into the care of any husband, Morgan felt certain her uncle wouldn't release the reins of Seabridge quietly. She had also had an epiphany 3 weeks back. Coming to terms with the fact that he would eventually reach the realization that she couldn't live if he was to keep Seabridge for himself, she knew that, without hesitation, the bastard would kill her. There was no one to stop him. It was the catalyst she needed to bolster the courage to make her escape. Her uncle wasn't going to control her any longer. "I will go to King Henry and beg his indulgence for an audience," she said, firming up the plan in her mind to give her courage. Morgan wasn't quite sure how to go about that request, but she would figure it out. If he declined her audience, or did grant the audience but declined her request outright, she would use the document. However, she was also smart enough to know it was never wise to push a king into a corner. She would allow Henry to select her husband and pray for the best. And in this instance, it was better to dance with the devil she didn't know than for her to continue this dance with the one she did. She pushed down the fear. She pushed aside the uncertainty. Tonight she was leaving it all behind, carrying nothing except her courage, a small sack of belongings, and the contract her mother had told her never to forget. That contract was between her father and the king. It was a commitment that would truly set her free.